Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, did Trump just dodge an indictment? The art of the deal of not getting indicted. It's very interesting. And then Jim Jordan joins us for the latest on his dispute with Alvin Bragg, Weaponization of Government Committee, and ESG. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast by opening up your podcast app and typing in Charlie Kirk Show. Email me your feedback of this episode. I love hearing from you. And get your friends to subscribe and give us a 5-star review if you can on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews really help us out. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by my friends Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage, 888-888-1172 or andrewandtodd.com. What a week this has been, starting with the rumors that Donald Trump was going to be indicted. And now is the Manhattan DA getting cold feet? Are we seeing a little bit of trepidation set in? If it ends up and it turns out that Donald Trump is indeed not indicted in the Manhattan DA, it will go down as one of the most interesting test cases in how to pre-bunk and use a mass media effort to actually get a DA that seemed to be focused on an indictment to have some doubt, to say, I don't know if we want to do that. I don't know if we're really on solid footing here. And the best part is Trump is practically begging them to indict him, and Democrats are saying, it's a trap, it's a trap. They don't really know what to do. In fact, now the media is upset. Now, look, all cards on the table, just to make clear, it's very possible they still indict Donald Trump. The Bragg grand jury is meeting today, and they very well might still issue an indictment. But it doesn't seem as clear as it was yesterday. In fact, they're now blaming Trump for the fact that he said he was going to be indicted, and it muddied the waters and got everybody confused. It's Trump's fault that Trump is not indicted. What? It's Donald Trump's fault that he's not yet arrested. Don't believe me? This is Ari Melber, super triggered. This is the guy that wears a mask while he showers, that Donald Trump announced that he was going to be arrested but hasn't yet. Donald Trump screwed up his own arrest. This guy ruins everything. Play cut 64.
One day later, and Donald Trump's prediction of his own indictment and arrest has not occurred, which is why we've always followed the facts and the evidence in this still quite hot, escalating legal story. We don't follow the claims, the predictions, or self-serving pronouncements. Whatever drove Trump to claim he knew what was coming was not, as of tonight, the whole entire or accurate picture.
It's not the whole accurate picture. He's a liar. How dare he say he's going to be arrested? Donald Trump messed up his own arrest. It's very interesting what's happening here, because Donald Trump's strategy was that, look, an indictment seemed likely. The Manhattan DA said that. By the way, he was just responding to Fox News reports. He was responding to publicly available reports that said he was going to be indicted. And by the way, if there was not a plan to indict him, why were they putting up barricades outside of the Manhattan DA's office? And so President Trump was presented with a choice. The choice was very simple. Do you just kind of hide and hope they don't indict you? Or do you basically set the standard and pre-bunk the narrative, push back against it aggressively and assertively, and put them on defense, say, you go make the case? And what the Manhattan DA found, and this was a very interesting kind of wrinkle here, is that the typical anti-Trump intelligentsia were not as enthusiastic for this as one might have expected. There was some trepidation. There was almost nervousness. There was anxiety. There was unease. There was, the typical go get Trump people. They were riding up beds and stuff. But it wasn't a full-throated defense from the New York Times. If you go read the New York Times articles over this last weekend on the Sunday edition, the New York Times was saying, well, it's kind of a novel in theory. It's a kind of a new, legal approach, it wasn't the typical, this is terrible, this is awful, this must happen. I mean, you had the MSNBC crowd saying, well, a crime is a crime is a crime is a crime, and a crime and a crime and is a crime is a crime. That was the best they could do. But they knew deep down that this was shaky. This is the New York Times quote. In this case, the second crime could be a violation of New York state election law. While hush money is not inherently illegal, the prosecutors could argue that a $130,000 payout effectively became an improper donation to Mr. Trump's campaign under the theory that because the money silenced Ms. Daniels, it benefited his candidacy. But it's not inherently illegal, and it was also a federal election. And by the way, it was Michael Cohen who made the payment, not Donald Trump, and there was no reimbursement by either the Trump campaign or Donald Trump personally. It's kind of this legal pretzel. And so Donald Trump, by leaning into this over the weekend, it might, if he ends up not getting indicted, it might go down as one of the most brilliant PR tactics in pre-bunking a political persecution, prosecution, indictment in modern American history, if he actually ends up not getting indicted, which there's no guarantee of that at the current in the current moment. But it seems as if you were to kind of do the betting markets, I'd say that on Monday, it looked like 99% he was going to get indicted. Barricades, press trucks, leaks, profiles of Alvin Bragg and Politico. It was everywhere. And now on Thursday, I'd say the betting markets are probably 50-50. I don't know. They don't seem as the gusto to indict Donald Trump is certainly not what it was. It's kind of like, I don't really know. And doesn't seem as if they're making as strong of an argument as they were previously. In fact, last evening, there was some breaking news. New bombshell document shows that a 2018 letter from Michael Cohen's letter to the Federal Election Commission says that Cohen used his own money to pay Stormy Daniels. Trump did not reimburse him, was not party to the transaction, and did not reimburse Michael Cohen from the campaign or personal. Well, that throws more than a wrinkle. That throws a massive curveball into the entire indict Trump campaign kind of crusade. But then Cohen then later changed his tune, and he says, well, actually, that wasn't true. I mean, the guy constantly lies. He is the worst witness imaginable. Cohen got arrested later, got put in prison, and now Cohen is saying, well, you know, Donald Trump is the worst, and Donald Trump actually did direct this. What we see here is a very interesting kind of sequence of events. These people are driven by revenge. They're trying to break your spirit and break your will. They're trying to get you to surrender. The New York DA is obviously doing this not just for political reasons, but for reasons to try to fulfill a blood oath promise that these people made the night that Donald Trump won the election and Hillary Clinton was not able to take over the regime. This is all an extension in 2016. This is 7 years later playing out. And now Alvin Bragg has responded to Jim Jordan. By the way, Jim Jordan is going to join the program shortly, saying that Trump created a false expectation about his alleged arrest. Well, hold on a second. Wait, Alvin Bragg is now saying that Trump created a false expectation? Do you see that? If they backpedal any further, they're going to trip over their own shoelaces. They're now setting a different expectation that, no, we were just doing the grand jury thing. Okay, Alvin Bragg, if that's the case, why were you doing Politico puff pieces where you obviously allowed a photographer to come in and take a picture of you, of kind of this profile picture of, oh, yes, stoic Alvin Bragg. Look at me. I'm 200 pounds overweight, and I also can indict Donald Trump. And I'm a non-political person. Okay, Alvin Bragg, why are you setting the expectation? Oh, it turns out you had an awful case. It's baseless. It's nonsense. And all of a sudden, Alvin Bragg is now having to justify himself as a quote-unquote non-political prosecutor. But Alvin Bragg thought, Alvin Bragg assumed, Alvin Bragg expected something that did not happen. It's fascinating. He thought that over this last weekend, there would be a chattering cacophony of Mockingbird Media people defending him. And Alvin Bragg looked around, he said, and he realized he was not getting the quote-unquote intellectual defense that he thought he was going to get in the New York Times, the Washington Post. He was getting very, very skeptical opinion pieces. He was just getting kind of lukewarm sentiments from the typical get Trump people. In fact, some people said, yeah, this is the weakest case. So now what is Alvin Bragg trying to do? It seems as if he's backpedaling. He could still go for this. But boy, is there doubt in that very big head of Alvin Bragg. And there is doubt in that entire Manhattan DA's office. Are you guys getting enough sleep? Probably not. Sleep is one of the most powerful factors to upgrading your health. The problem with sleep is many of you probably say, I want to go to bed at 9, but I don't fall asleep till 11:30. What if I told you that if you wanted to go to bed at 9, you could be asleep by 9:05? Daisy, who works on our team, I said, look, you got a big problem. You're not having enough magnesium, right? True story. And she tried it, and she came back to work the next day, and she said, Charlie, I don't even remember going to sleep. Boom, you fall asleep. Now, look, many of you guys probably say, but Charlie, I take melatonin. Well, there's an issue with melatonin. It's not altogether bad. Huberman believes it actually could increase symptoms of depression, but the problem with melatonin is that the body adapts, and you need to take more and more of it, and it becomes less effective. There's a much better approach, and you feed your body the natural melatonin building blocks and the transformers, known as cofactors, so that your body naturally produces melatonin. Thanks to a brand new sleep formula developed by my friends at Bioptimizers, you can experience the best sleep ever. After years of trial and error and sleep tracking, they finally launched a new groundbreaking sleep formula called Sleep Breakthrough. Sleep Breakthrough is a delicious sleep drink that supports your natural melatonin production and relaxation without creating a dependency so that you have your best night's sleep on demand. It targets 5 different sleep pathways to give you the best sleep ever. You'll fall asleep in minutes and you'll stay asleep throughout the night. And I know many of you say, Charlie, I want to go to bed at 10 o'clock, but then I end up falling asleep and I end up groggy and then I got a lot of coffee and the cycle continues. What helps you get the right amount of REM and deep sleep, and best of all, you'll wake up feeling rested and rejuvenated so that you can have the best day possible. For an exclusive offer for my listeners, go to sleepbreakthrough.com/Kirk. That is sleepbreakthrough.com/Kirk. In addition to the discount you get by using promo code Kirk10, you can unlock special gifts with purchase with retail values of at least $20. This is a limited time offer for select orders. Go to sleepbreakthrough.com/Kirk right now. That is sleepbreakthrough.com/Kirk and use code Kirk10 for a discount. We discussed this last evening at our Turning Point USA event with Candace Owens at The Ohio State University. But it was really prompted by the brilliant Victor Davis Hanson, who made a point that is so profound. And I want to explore this for a second with you before we have Jim Jordan coming in the next segment. Victor Davis Hanson is a classicist. And so he has spent most of his life dealing in things that are much deeper than American politics. Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, Herodotus, Greek and Roman history. He's a brilliant man. And so when he started to get into political commentary in the last decade or two, by the way, Rush used to talk about VDH before almost anybody else, he was able to view politics through such a clear lens because he's classically trained. He has this amazing foundation of understanding human nature, political community, power dynamics. And so he's a clear thinker. He's one of my favorite people in public commentary. This is a longer clip, but it deserves it. Play cut 45, where VDH says, wait a second, you guys control everything, and yet you're still unhappy, and you still need to go indict a former president. Why? Play cut 45.
Well, there's two things that a republic needs to survive. And one is you have to have a judicial system that's not weaponized. And you can't criminalize politics. We're doing both. They're so asymmetrical. They're not applying the law equally. What are they afraid of? They have the institutional support. They own Hollywood entertainment, the corporate boardroom, academia, K-12. But even with all that power, institutional power, they're still paranoid of what the people feel and what the people would do. So they have this weaponized criminal justice system and this criminalizing of politics. And I don't know how long it can continue and you can still have a republic, because the cynicism is at pandemic proportions.
Let's zero in on one of the things he said. Wait a second. So you control every major institution, Hollywood, all of academia. And yet, instead of saying, wow, we've conquered every major institution, no, they are bloodthirsty to see a former president in handcuffs. Why is that? A couple things. If their victory was inevitable, they wouldn't have to act like this. These are the most paranoid, unhappy, quote-unquote, victors of a culture war. I put that in air quotes because I don't think they've actually won as much as they think they have. I think they've temporarily maintained control. I think they've taken over the Bastille and people are looking around and saying, those people are nuts and we got to remove them. And yet, all they know is to how then to try to extract revenge against their political opponents and their enemies. And it goes to show a couple things, that these are deeply unsatisfied people. They're lacking of purpose. They have a lack of meaning, largely because of the rise of secularism. It's an existential void, an existential despair that they fill through making themselves believe that they are fighting evil by trying to lock up Donald Trump. It's not going to fill that God-shaped hole in your heart. It's not going to happen. But I think it's equally as interesting, though, that from a political standpoint, these people are not acting, these people being the American left and the regime, are they acting with the confidence or the stability that someone would act if they think they're going to keep on winning? They're acting in a neurotic, paranoid, frenetic, unstable way that makes it seem as if they're afraid they're going to lose power at any time. And that's so interesting. And I think it's true. I think deep down, these left wingers, the thing that they fear most is you and the regular American people waking up and challenging their authority. They're not acting nearly as powerful as we sometimes think they are. I'm not saying that they're actually weak. That's not my argument. But they're acting scared. They're acting frightened. This is not the way that a confident movement. They're lashing out largely because they feel vulnerable. They feel exposed. So they control academia, Hollywood, social media, major corporations. They control the Senate. They control the White House. They control the Leviathan. They control the bureaucracies. It goes to show that these are very ideologically insecure people. And the only way they can cope with that insecurity and that vulnerability is to go try to imprison their political opponents. But that should be a little bit of a shot in the arm. It should be a little bit of a boost to you that these people are not acting like they think they're going to be in power indefinitely. They're acting neurotically, like how people act before the fall of a great evil power. Think about that. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. That's right. You heard me. MyPillow 2.0. When Mike Lindell, great American patriot, invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. But now, 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has a patented adjustable fill on the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. For exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free offer with promo code Kirk and get your best sleep ever. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in America and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to buy one and get one free offer. Enter promo code Kirk or call 800-875-0425 to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. That is MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Check it out. So basically, let me set up the timeline here as we're working to get Jim Jordan on the line. Basically, Alvin Bragg and his office look like they're going to indict Donald Trump over the weekend. They put out barricades, puff pieces in Politico. They're getting ready for all of it. The case weakens as it gets more and more media scrutiny. They become more and more scared, like terrified children. And now all of a sudden they start to push back. But one element of this, and this is exactly how to use political power, and Jim Jordan deserves so much credit for doing this, is that the U.S. Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives, controlled by Jim Jordan, basically asked a question. Hey, what are you doing? Now you might say, well, why does the House of Representatives have jurisdiction here? It's a former president, first time in American history. You better believe you should ask questions of this. You're trying to tell me that if Nancy Pelosi controlled the House of Representatives and a local DA was going to try to indict Barack Obama, that Nancy Pelosi wouldn't ask questions out of that local DA? That's preposterous. It would happen in a moment, happen in a heartbeat. And so this put the DA on defense. The case is so obviously bad. It is so shaky. It is so awful. It is so flawed. It is so terrible that Jim Jordan just started to ask a couple questions. Hey, we're from the House Weaponization Subcommittee, and we're wondering, and he's also the chairman of the judiciary, what is the case here? What's the precedent? FEC said it's all fine. Just asking very simple questions. And then Alvin Bragg now has responded to Jim Jordan, saying that Trump created a false expectation about his alleged arrest. As if the Trump derangement syndrome, and I don't love that term, I think it's overused, but it actually is perfect here. As if the insanity and the pathological behavior could not get any worse. The argument the media is now making is that it is Donald Trump's fault that Donald Trump is not yet arrested. This is their current argument. Congressman Jim Jordan being head of judiciary has been one of the best developments of this new Congress. And in more ways than one, we have seen what it takes to check and balance, to have oversight, and to oversee these bureaucracies that otherwise get no scrutiny. In fact, as we're waiting to get him on the line here, the House Weaponization Subcommittee also showed that Merrick Garland's memo targeting school boards was completely illegitimate and had no legitimate basis at all for the Attorney General's anti-parent memo. And so we're finally starting to see real points on the board, real cross-examination here. This, I know there's a lot of disappointment. I share that disappointment about the November midterms. But this is a tangible and measurable and real result from us taking back the House of Representatives back in November. We take back the House of Representatives. We now can ask questions of Alvin Bragg. We now can find out about moms and dads being targeted on school boards. Actual legitimate oversight. The moment that we're at now is you got to ask the question, do you think a Congress controlled by John Boehner or Paul Ryan would also do this type of oversight? I want to play some tape here just to kind of lead this up here. I know we're working on a tech thing with Jim Jordan. Let's go to this. Cut 48. Elise Stefanik talking about Alvin Bragg from a first person perspective. Go to cut 48.
Being from New York, I think Alvin Bragg in particular is the most radical DA you can ultimately get to. So at the same time as you have him politically targeting and persecuting President Trump, he's lowering felonies and misdemeanors, which has been one of the reasons why crime has skyrocketed in New York City. Even the Washington Post has pointed out that this is a zombie case that the Department of Justice passed upon, the Southern District of New York passed upon, and yet now you have the most radical DA imaginable going after President Trump and doing the bidding of Joe Biden.
Joining us now is Jim Jordan, who is in a letter kind of dispute with Alvin Bragg. Congressman Jordan, thank you for your leadership. What is the latest between you and Alvin Bragg?
Well, we just got his response back, Charlie. First of all, thanks for all the good work you do. We got his response back this morning. We're going to take a look at all that and review it and see where we go next. And now last night we did send letters to two of the individuals I think prompted all this. Mr. Pomerantz, Mr. Dunn, who used to work for, they were assistants to the DA's office there, left and threw a fit, wrote a book, pressured, mounted from the left for Mr. Bragg to go after President Trump. Because understand what Ms. Stefanik just said there. She's 100% right. The DOJ chose not to take this case after the Mueller investigation. Federal District of New York did want to take the case. Cy Bayes, the previous district attorney, wasn't going to take the case. But more importantly, and most importantly, Alvin Bragg wasn't going to take the case. The Soros-backed new DA, left-wing DA, Alvin Bragg, he wasn't even going to take the case because there is no case until Pomerantz and Dunn resign, start the pressure campaign. And maybe most important, he wasn't going to take the case until President Trump announced he was running for president. I think that may have had an impact on his change of mind as well. So we all know this is political. That's why we wrote the letter to him. That's why we've written the letter to Mr. Pomerantz, Mr. Dunn. We want to talk to those two individuals as quickly as we can.
This is a legitimate function of oversight and actually getting questions and understanding what exactly is happening here. It seems as if as soon as you just start asking very basic, very simple questions, Alvin Bragg gets all bothered. We have the letter here where now his argument, I'll just make sure I understand this correctly, Congressman. He's saying that now Trump has created a false expectation about his arrest. I mean, that's an extraordinary statement for someone who just put up barricades around his office. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no kidding. I think one line that stuck out to me in the letter is they said that they suggest that Congress is looking in this solely for a personal advancement of the investigators or to punish those investigated, and is therefore in that our position asking for this. And so that seems like they're describing themselves, because Alvin Bragg said while he was running for the job that he was going to go after President Trump. As we said, no one else would take this case. And of course, never forget where the left has been. First, it was the Russia investigation, President Trump. Then it was the phone call with Zelensky. They tried to impeach him over. Then it was, we want your tax returns. We want all your business records. They went after that for years. Then it's to go after his children and their business endeavors. And now, of course, it's this with the district attorney in Manhattan. So the country, I think, fully understands that they have been out to get President Trump. And I think the key question is why? Why are they so out to get him? Because he got in office and did what he said he was going to do and fought for the American people.
Yeah, so the critique that people are throwing at you is that you don't have the authority to do oversight on Bragg. Bragg is saying that you do not have that. I find that to be preposterous and laughable. What is your response there?
Well, they've used federal funds in their office. That's obviously a link to the federal government. We think it's been reported that there was coordination between members of Congress and Alvin Bragg. So that's something that I think warrants looking into. And then there's just the fundamental fact that this looks like an abuse of federal election, the influence on our federal election process. Because again, Mr. Bragg said he wasn't going to take this case, and then President Trump announces he's running for president, and suddenly he's back involved in the case. So I think there's all those issues. And then they're talking about, if you can believe what's been written in the mainstream press, they're talking about a campaign, federal campaign finance laws. And then in a broader sense, this is why Mr. Comer and Mr. Stile also signed onto the letter. The House Oversight Committee, which Mr. Comer chairs, has the broadest jurisdiction. They can investigate anything at any time, any matter at any time is the authority of the Oversight Committee. So I think there's all kinds of reasons why we can do this. And then there's sort of just the basic, does this really pass the smell test when legal scholars left and right are saying there is no case here, but Mr. Bragg is proceeding anyway? I think it's like, this is a pretty darn unique situation.
Yeah, it is. And I'm thrilled that you are doing oversight and that you're using political power to actually be able to get answers for the American people. And Congressman, it's really important to recognize that if Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House and a Republican DA tried to indict Barack Obama, you better believe they would be using every instrument of power to do a lot more than even ask questions. They would just be all over it. And so that's really, really important. And so, please go ahead, Congressman.
Charlie, think about what happened 2 weeks ago in a 48-hour time frame, two weeks ago. Chuck Schumer asked Rupert Murdoch, don't play the January 6th tapes on Fox Network. The very next day, the House Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, we released a report that shows the FTC was going after Elon Musk and Twitter and asked Twitter, who are the journalists you've been talking to? Name four journalists by name. The very next day, two of those four journalists testified in the House Judiciary Committee, testified in front of us, and Democrat members of Congress asked those two members of the press, who are your sources? That happened in a 48-hour time frame. That is how the left goes after the First Amendment, undermines the First Amendment, goes after people, and they're upset that we're asking questions about what they're now doing, attempting to do to President Trump. I mean, it's ridiculous, the arguments you hear from them.
I want to play a piece of tape here as we get ready to ask Jim Jordan about a really important question here about the first veto in ESG. I think we all underestimate the sinister nature of ESG. Let's play cut 81. Joe Biden issuing his first veto, and that's telling, isn't it? The first veto of his presidency. That means that they're in agreement on almost everything, except this radical environmentalism stuff. Joe Biden is standing basically for the end of modern American capitalism. That's how big of a deal ESG is. Play cut 81.
I just signed this veto. because the legislation passed by the Congress would put at risk the retirement savings of individuals across the country. They couldn't take into consideration investments that wouldn't be impacted by climate, impacted by overpaying executives, and that's why I decided to veto it. It makes sense to veto it.
He's just reading a script provided to him by Greta Thunberg. Congressman, we just played that piece of tape of Joe Biden's first veto. What can you do, head of weaponization of government committee and also judiciary, to have a counterbalance on the social credit system, ESG? I think it's one of the great plots that destroy America. Your thoughts?
No, you're exactly right. And frankly, what the president said, it's actually just the opposite, because they're focusing investments, and number of companies now get together and there's this initiative of investment groups to pressure big companies not to invest in certain type of things that would give a good return for the maybe a better return, frankly, for the American people and for the investors themselves. So, excuse me, what he articulated was just the opposite of what's going on. So we have actually we've inquired of this Climate Action 100, these investment groups that get together and again put pressure on companies not to invest in, for example, oil and gas. I mean, so to think about it, one of the reasons we have record inflation is because what Joe Biden and this administration has done to American energy and the energy independence we had under President Trump. That's what's driving up the cost of everything else and all the other prices. That's a huge contributing factor to that. And frankly, it's this inflation that I think has caused the Fed to raise rates now to deal with it and the whole banking issue. So it all stems from this crazy concept. Much of it stems from this crazy concept. That this ESG investing, which is so wrong. So yeah, this is something Congress has to do.
You have so many things in front of you, but would you be potentially willing to doing ESG hearings? Maybe even bring Larry Fink, the $10 trillion man, in. I think this warrants some oversight. The ESG thing is incredibly unpopular with regular people, and they've really not been asked a lot of questions. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah, no, we sent a colleague and I have been sent a letter to this Climate Action 100. Asking about these kind of things. I actually think probably the best place for the hearings is in the Financial Services Committee, because that's where so much of this is going, and this move to stop. You know, a few years ago, it was they went after people in the firearms industry. We're not going to bank people. And it was a target there. But this is almost like more of an antitrust kind of concern, which would have some jurisdiction with us. But I think it's probably going to be more of these hearings will take place in the Financial Services
Committee. So really quick, you have now issued another report on Merrick Garland. What have you learned so far on the weaponization of government against moms and dads that want to ask questions about their kids' curriculum?
It was totally manufactured. Not my words. One of the Democrat U.S. attorneys in the Biden administration, that is one of the things they said, is this looked like a manufactured issue, a manufactured, quote, crisis. We didn't see any need for it. They federalized it. And remember what Democrats told us. Democrats told us when we first raised this in the fall of 2021, they told us that, oh, well, the counterterrorism measures will never be used against parents. Yes, they were. Our report shows that in the Northern District of Georgia, they were used. They said there was no coordination between the school board groups and the Biden administration prior to the initial letter from the National School Boards Association. Yes, there was. Those school board groups were talking with the Biden White House, talking with the Department of Justice and the Department of Education prior to ever sending the letter, which prompted Merrick Garland to send the memorandum. So it was they created the predicate. They hatched this plan to go after moms and dads. And then, of course, they said there were threats all over the country. And of course, there weren't. It was a manufactured crisis. Now, they still went out and investigated 25 parents. One turned into a full investigation. But guess what, Charlie? No one, not one single person has been charged under this scheme that was put in place by the Biden administration. They thought it was going to help Terry McAuliffe become governor of Virginia. It backfired and helped Glenn Youngkin win that gubernatorial race.
Congressman Jim Jordan, I think it's so important we hold these people accountable. We're out of time. Please continue to keep the pressure on. And I know you guys are working at it, but we have got to get to the bottom of this intergovernmental, interdepartment collusion, especially on the spying of Americans, this Patriot Act 2.0. I know you guys are on it. Expose the shadow government and the Leviathan. Congressman, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
I want to compliment one of our listeners. We have the best listeners. This is because it's kind of something I said earlier about how paranoid these people are operating. And she said, Charlie, you never feel good about a grade when you know you cheated to get it. God designed us this way. And that is true. Actually, when Cain murdered Abel and God said, hey, where is your brother? How did Cain respond? Cain responded, what am I, my brother's keeper? He didn't say, well, I murdered him, because he knew actually there's some, God gave you some element of consciousness. It wasn't enough. That's why you had done the Noahic covenant and eventually the Ten Commandments and then eventually the laws of Moses. And of course, now in the Christian view, the New Testament. But God gave you some consciousness, gave you some balance of good versus evil. Even though these treacherous Democrats are doing such damage, there's something in them that makes them feel, hopefully, I don't know, they're willing to admit it, but unhappy and maybe a weight of guilt. And they're lashing out even more as a way to compensate for that, because they think the only way is forward. No, the actual only way is to repent and to stop persecuting people because of political differences. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.